A Thousand Lives Lived podcast. The podcast where a thousand lives come to life. Where mysterious creatures take flight. Where the blind lead and where space is transversible. A place where the imagination is unleashed. Anything can happen. Hi, friends, and welcome to the show. I'm Hazel Danes, and I'm here with
Tamara Lindsay.
Today, we'll be continuing our new series on world building. But before we get into that, we're going to go down the rabbit hole.
What was your rabbit hole this week?
Well, I actually started The Last Kingdom. We're going to be featuring that in one of our podcast series is in October, I think, is when we're starting that. I spent like in 2 hours reading the first like half of the book yesterday. Like I've got a bit of a sense of like what's going on. And
oh, I didn't realize it was. Oh, that would make sense because the cover is a movie cover when you look at it on the e-version. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
But there's a ton that is left out. So we're just reading book one. There's, okay. I don't know how many books there are, but there's like, I don't know, like a lot of books. So the first book, I had no idea, was mostly so far about him as a child. The writing's very interesting to me, but we'll get into that when we start our podcast.
When we talk about it.
Right.
My rabbit hole this week is we took a trip to Canada. So we're from the States. We were 3 days in Minnesota, and then we were 3 days in Winnipeg. And we had the tremendous good fortune of being in Winnipeg on Canada Day. And so we went down we went down to the Forks, which is this place right along the river where they used to have, you know, where the traders used to be, and they used to be, you know, military forts, Fort Garry and stuff. So it's like the central part of Winnipeg. And it was really, really cool because there was all... I mean, cities in general are much more multicultural, but Canada in general is much more multicultural. And it was just so great just being there with all those people. They had a special, they centered Canada Day this year around, as I'm sure you know, they centered it around Treaty One and the first treaties. And there was an Indigenous ceremony going on all day in the Forks. And I mean, it was just amazing. We had such a great time. And I'm really, really glad I was there on Canada Day. And then not only that, we ate Persian. We ate sushi. We ate Ethiopian. Whenever I go to a city anywhere, I try to find an Ethiopian restaurant. We had Ethiopian. It was like in Old Town, and it was a place where you're walking along and there were drunks sort of wobbling along the side, and there was a big pile of something you didn't want to step on. And
oh dear.
But it was just this really great family restaurant, and it was just, we had such a great time. And then when we came back, so we were there, July 1st is Canada Day, and then July 4th is of course the 4th of July in the States. And we drove back on the 4th 16 hours at dusk. We were driving through these little towns with all these fireworks. And then there was a huge thunderstorm. So there was lightning. It was so cool. Anyway, that's my
nice. Yeah. Wow. Very patriotic.
Yes.
I didn't do anything for Canada Day.
Except, were you on a plane?
Well, I was day one in Canada. So okay.
Oh, God.
We'll get into our session here. Today, we are continuing with world building, and we're going to talk about creating a history. So we're basing our podcast on Tim Hickson's wonderfully entertaining YouTube channel called Hello Future Me, where he discusses fictional histories, and he mostly references Tolkien, The Handmaid's Tale, and Game of Thrones.
Last Airbender, Avatar The Last Airbender, the original series.
So all well-known pieces of fiction that we can all easily follow along with. We both really enjoyed watching his videos, and they're extremely informative for 26 minutes. So we'll be posting his links, so do check out his channel. So we're going to get into our questions here.
So Tim Hickson has a really helpful guide that he has laid out, and you can actually get it in the notes of that particular video. He has a really quick layout of it. But anyway, he has a seven-step guide where you go through to make your world more complex, where he talks about these things. But he repeatedly says, history is complicated.
Yeah.
because it is. And so these steps are ways to help you make your history, your background, your world more complicated. And so his steps are, step one, identify your anchors. And that means, do you create your world first or do you create your story first and then work backwards? And then step two is you look at your world through six different lenses. That's cultural, economic, political, religion, technology, and geography. And then step three is geographical variance. And that's where you look at different regions, and each region is not going to see these particular things the same. So you kind of make it even more complex by looking at the different regions or areas. Step four is causes and consequences. Find three causes and three consequences for each of those major events that you've created. And step four is identify technology and static. How long in the past did these events take place? And are they going to be almost myth now? Or are they going to be really, really fresh? And how are those records kept? Step six is who recorded the history? So, you know, the victors record history. So if they're telling the story, they're going to tell the story different than the people who lost. And step seven is how long has it been? I guess this is where he talks about how the history will appear, because how long in the past it was. And step eight was historical narratives. How do current events reflect on the historical narrative? Anyway, so that's sort of the general outline, but it's much more complicated than that.
Right. And I would say even those like steps are quite complicated.
Yeah.
Like as in there are amazing steps, and they would take a writer though, like a very long time to sort it all out.
We're laughing earlier about how you could be 10 books in and you might just start getting a grasp of all these different aspects. So
Right. So question number one is, should the author start with the story and then research the history, or the reverse? Which is easier and which is harder? I have to think about that.
I thought long and hard because I was trying to think how I do it. So the way he laid it out was, some people like Tolkien, his whole thing was about languages, and he created all these languages. And in order for these languages to exist in different forms, have different branches, then the world behind it had to have different branches. So these elves over here that split with these elves, their language developed differently. And so that's the way he worked. And Tim said that most people, most writers, I don't know if that's true, but maybe it is, actually start with the story and build the world from there. And I think I actually do a little bit of both. For instance, this last sci-fi that I did, I created the timeline because I was like, okay, projecting technology into the future, what is logical is going to develop? And then for other reasons, I had to have it 700 years in the future. So I had to be like, okay, here's sort of a general structure to a historical timeline to hang my hat on. And then I started creating, actually almost simultaneously, started creating characters and plot. What kind of plot can I have in this world? And then, so I started filling in the particulars of various worlds and things as I was actually writing. And so I kind of did both. Can you remember how you have created?
I think I probably do start with the story, actually. Like, so it starts with a very, very simple idea of a story. It's more like this person does this, or this person experiences this. And then, so it starts with the person.
So character, actually.
Yeah, character, and then what they experience. And then I have to build the world around that person. But I think that actually is a lot harder. Because you're kind of doing it blind and trying to make things fit so that that person is realistic, right?
Right.
I can see that it's more challenging, but I feel like my inspiration and ideas for stories happen first before a world happens.
Right. And do you build that world before you start writing, or do you just building it as you write?
I think I build as I write, usually. And it's like I just start writing, and then once I put myself in like, I have to answer this for this to make sense, then I go back and sort it out. But there, I can definitely see some difficulties to that, because like he was saying, if you do it like that, you could run into having like not very complex world or history, right? And you
talk more about that. That was really interesting.
So yeah, I think that's actually one of our questions.
Let's not move on yet, because I wanted to make one more point and then we'll move on. So for me, that kind of dichotomy is different for different genres. So I think on one end of the spectrum for me is historical fiction. And my reason, I do the world building like way in depth first before I do anything, because I have this fear that people are going to catch me out. You know, they're going to be like, you got that historical fact wrong. And so I like over prepare because I'm like, I got to have my history down. Even though, as they say, that the past is another country and they don't know either. They just have their own conception of what it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
And so historical fiction is over here with world building. When I write contemporary fiction, like literary fiction, I'm often basing it on my own life. And so I don't do hardly any world building. It's the world I've built over years and years and years that is me, you know? And then in the middle is sort of the other genres, sci-fi and fantasy, because I do build a world, but I'm kind of doing it on the fly too, according to what my characters need. So I think, you know, it depends on which genre I'm writing in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that when you're figuring out a story or like a novel, you have to have plot down. I need characters and I need plot. But for plot to make sense, you also have to be world building at the same time.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Why is this thing so? Well, there's your world.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like I personally just do it all kind of in one big snowball task instead of just sitting, okay, I'm focusing on world building. And then I'm going to focus on this character. And then I'm going to focus on this plot, because I feel like that's what I used to do. And I never actually wrote anything because I was so stuck in world building, right? Like,
yes, you felt like you didn't have enough. So you never got started.
Or yeah. And it was a matter of like, I didn't know how to just write something with like on the fly, where now I feel like I can.
You can write to a certain point, like, oh, I have to know this, and then go figure it out.
Yeah, like it's like I have more control over what I know I need.
Right.
Or more understanding of that. Whereas before I was like, I don't have the confidence to jump into a story without having it fully alive in my head, which never happened because I didn't know how to do that. It's a very complex thing to talk about. And I love his steps because it makes it like, okay, I feel like I need to make a poster of that and put it in my office, right? Like these are the exactly. steps of how to do it, because in every step might take you at least a month.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Right.
Yeah.
Like yeah, take absolutely. You, these steps will take you a long, long time, but they are really good for creating a super realistic, like immersive world.
But could you stop yourself from actually writing? Because as you're doing the world building, if you're like me, you're like, oh, that would be a really cool story. And that would be a really cool story. And I have like 20 different stories on the first day where I'm like, I could write that. And so it's hard to stop myself from starting to write the narrative because I'm like so excited about the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do that too. An idea for when I've already started the book, an idea will just like float in my head. I'm like, oh, how do I get that in there? And I think that's actually the best like history building and world building that I do is where it's almost in the editing process. I think to myself, this book needs more. It needs another point yes. of view. It needs more complexness. It needs complexity. That's the word.
We're writers. We can make up.
Yeah. I don't sit there and do world building. I focus on the character and the plot. And then I just kind of puts more ingredients in as I go. It's like making a meal, right? You start with your protein and your vegetables, and then you think, okay, well, how do I make those taste really good?
Mm-hmm. You
don't just do chicken and
oh my God, there's our $1 million idea. We'll have our own helping people write with writing is like a make like a recipe. Like
it's like food. Cooking.
Like call yeah. it cooking.
It yes. is a lot like cooking. Because good yes. a really amazing meal actually takes hours. I feel like there is a, what's that math term where there's like a correlation. Yes.
yes.
There's a correlation between amazing food and time that it took.
Yes.
Right.
Even if it's in the growing of the vegetables or something. I mean, it just right. goes into, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. That's the same yes. with building worlds and writing a book. In a lot of ways, I feel like the more time and the slower you are at it, the better it will be in right. the end. Right.
Right. right. Something that's related to this, which isn't exactly this, but people talk about the difference between plot and story. And it's not clear when you say it that way. But what I mean is there is a difference between events that actually happen and how you construct them as a narrative. And he actually talks about this in a slightly different way, but say you want to write a story about something that happened to you. And you know that this happened and this happened, and your brother tells a story that's similar, but has a slightly different take on it because they took something different away from it. But you know that there are these facts, and there's a bunch of different facts of this is what happened. The way you tell the story, you may jump around in time. You may add elements about something totally different that happened as background that happened 30 years ago, you know, whatever. Anyway, the plot is actually taking all those bits and putting them in order on the page. And they are not, they could be like the story, you know, follow the story chronologically. They could be chronological like the story, but they leave all kinds of things out that actually happened. And they, you know, the best stories pull from all over, right? And so this is part of what we're getting at is the whole idea of what actually happens, the real raw stuff of experience and what actually happened in the world is different than what you put on the page.
Right. That's actually what I love to do as a writer, where I'm like, okay, I'm going to build this world. Actually, I think that's one of the questions that I have in the book here. Like, I'm going to build this world, but I'm not going to tell you all about it because that's not very good writing. I'm not going to tell you every little detail that I did because that's now a history book.
Yes.
Right. So yeah, we're going to touch on that balance because I thought about that as I was reading or watching these videos, like, how do you balance that?
Okay, what's our next question?
Okay, so next question. We've been talking a little bit about this, but Tim talks about one-dimensional history and how there's a lot of fiction out there that will base their backstory history, like as in something big happened in the either furthest reaches of the history or like recent history that changed society and then kind of gives a background to the current characters' experiences and plot and whatnot. So he gives an example of one of Brandon Sanderson's books where a pivotal historical event happened like 4,500 years before the book. And it was just one event, kind of like as in the flood, right? Mm-hmm. And I just thought like, okay, so the question here is, do you agree or disagree with the importance of having a complex historical background to your book as opposed to one major event that changed all of world history? And this was actually a really hard thing for me to think about because I think that he is right in that, especially in recent times where, like in our world, the world is way more connected now. We are knowledgeable of so many different events that happen at the same time that all of the events can influence us, right? Because it's like a bigger global world now. But in like even 500 years ago, the world was a lot more local. You didn't even know what happened outside of your region, really. Like it would take, and if you did, it would be, you'd hear of it weeks after it actually happened. So the influences are smaller. You know less. People don't read as, like, they don't have as much literacy. Like, so I think that's true, but I also am not sure it's completely 100% true. So I'll take an example of something historical that I think is one event that just tossed the whole world. So that would be the collapse of the Roman Empire in the West. So the whole known world is 100% impacted by this one giant event. And it changed.
But China wasn't.
Right. So like, I mean, the known world.
Oh, been, our, like, our Western world.
The Western world. Yeah. China was.
I think that's part of his point in that, exactly that, in that something that seemed to rock one world. And even if it was like widespread, when, you know, Krakatoa, of course, would. But something that was widespread that seemed to like shake and change the whole world. It's actually not the whole world. It's the world of that particular area. And another area, while they might hear about it, it might affect them in some, you know, people quit trading quite as much or something. It doesn't affect them. And I think that's part of its point, is it affects different regions differently and that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah. And I think that could be interesting where like in a book you say, yes, this giant cataclysmic event in history happened in the West, but it didn't. I'm sure it touched China, but I'm not sure how it did. So I think that I agree. It depends how far-reaching your book is. If you're zeroing into one culture and one society, then I think that you could make a case for like one big event impacting that culture and society. But if you are talking more broadly about like many different, say, he talks about regions and geography and continents, and if you're kind of blowing out your plot to see many cultures, then No, you're right, it doesn't work. They need to have varying understandings of what happened.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I thought about without consciously thinking about it, but I thought about it a lot. So I have a book where the world moved out into space, and they sent out these little things called pings, and then all the world. And it's easy in sci-fi to kind of make everything happen in your country, right? It's easy to have all the stuff is, you know, people from the United States or from, you know, from Canada or whatever. Whereas if it's something like this, where you're moving out into space and all cultures are doing different aspects of that, it is bad to just have everything happen in the United States with people from the United States. You know, the aliens always land in the United States, you know? And so I thought a lot about it, and I tried to, as I was going, I don't know how good of a job I did of it, but I tried to pull, without it being cultural appropriation, tried to pull words from different cultures, ideas from different cultures. And I can only do that by going on the internet, right? And kind of like he says, you try to look at it from a bunch of different points of view and put in a bunch of different, my characters all have names from different cultures. So whenever I introduce a new culture, I'll sometimes just make up names out of the blue that'll be really weird that no name has ever been. But a lot of times I'll take names of people, like I'll just look at names of this culture or that culture and just pull a name from a different culture, because I want to have it seem like all these different things, all these different people were pulled from a bunch of different cultures, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that complexity where you look at how different groups see it and how important it is to them and that sort of thing. And I think you're absolutely right, what you said, which was, what is the scope of your story? If you're basically writing a play set in one room with two people, you obviously don't need that much backstory. You know, if you had two characters that are caught on a ship together, if you had like the Crucible kind of a situation, you would only need the background that affects them. But if you're writing a story that's world spanning with many people and many characters and all that kind of stuff, you definitely would need to really, really develop your worlds.
Right. And I think that it's fine to do like little bits, pockets of like references to enrich it. But if you're in the head of certain characters, like you're saying, you're basing it on what they know and what has impacted them. So I think it's a yes and a no.
Yeah, I agree. If you have two characters, you could certainly develop the backstory of one and the world of one, and then the backstory in the world of the other, especially if one's an alien. I mean, by necessity, you would have to have a totally different world for the other character.
Yeah.
That's actually a really good example, because, I mean, how do they even communicate?
That's the fun of space dramas.
Yes. Related to this is, it's easy to kind of think a place having one culture. Like I struggled with this when I was writing different worlds, because you tend to think of one place having one culture. And if you have a whole planet, that planet is going to have all kinds of different cultures doing all kinds of different things. But in my back of my mind, I was thinking of it as an area of the world, which would have one culture instead of a full planet that would have all these different cultures. And so that was actually something I have struggled with in the past.
The next question was a little bit difficult to formulate, but I'm going to do my best here. Okay, so what different set of rules can we come up with for creating a realistic history versus a surreal history? So realistic would be like in our world, either like in the future or in the past or whatever, like within our timeline. And then surreal is like a fantastical outside world that is not...
Magical realism.
Right. Magical realism, any sort of other world that's not Earth in our history. Let's just talk about like even one rule for creating a realistic history.
I haven't thought deeply about this question. So maybe you should go.
Okay. When you're in a realistic history mindset, can you incorporate fantasy into that? Where like you say, like, how far can you go where you can say like these beings existed, but now they are extinct? I'm sure you can do that because you're the author. You can do whatever you want as long as it works, right? Or some authors would have a rule where, no, if you're doing anything that's outside of the scientific ability of this planet, then you can't create that species.
It's like Brandon Sanderson was saying in the last video that we watched. He was sat on a panel where they asked him the question first, which was, what is your tip for creating a magical system? And he was like, well, you have to have rules, right? You have to have the rules of the magic system. I mean, he thought that was a really basic question that everybody did. You have to have rules for a magical system. But the other three people on the panel totally disagreed, and they argued the whole time about whether you needed rules for a magical system, because they were more about impressions. They were more about the effect of the magical system. And I suppose it would depend on whether one of your characters does the magic or not, whether they have to learn the magic or whatever. But for the other people, it was more surrealistic, right? It was just, we don't know if there's any rules behind it. It was more about the effect. Like Gandalf in Tolkien is more of this kind of a system, because you don't know what the rules of Gandalf's magic. You kind of learn a little bit about it, but you never really know what the magic is.
Yeah, he seems to be essentially like all powerful, really, right?
Yeah. He moves up in rank from gray to white. And so you don't know what that means exactly. And so you're not letting your audience in on what those rules are. If you have them in your head, hopefully you have something that's guiding you. So how could you, I would be a rules person myself. What would you do?
That's a good question. I think I could see myself just like deciding, I'm not going to tell the author, because I like to do that. I like to not tell, by the author, I mean the reader.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell the reader everything, because as a reader, I like to just ask my own questions too. So like, or just make it up. When I'm reading a book or watching a film or show, I don't need to have everything explained to me. Like, that doesn't make me annoyed. We are just going to take a 20-second break here for an advertisement. We'll be right back. Here at 1,000 Lives Lived, we have an exciting announcement. We are going to be launching our very own literary magazine. We're looking for talented writers to write us some flash fiction, short stories, and poetry. We'll be featuring 5 authors on our covers every month, and we will also be posting each story to our website. We'll be launching this fall. Okay, welcome back, everyone. So we were coming up with rules for realistic history. I'm not sure we even got a rule down.
For realistic history, you know, I started out with gritty realism and literary fiction, and then I tend to do realism in my and even art. When I do art, I have to like sort of really force myself if I'm going to do like something that's not representational. So I haven't thought about surreal. It would probably be a great exercise for me to do surrealism or magical realism or something like that. Because I mean, when I think of surrealism, I think of the Phantom Tollbooth or Alice in Wonderland or those kinds of books. Mm-hmm. And I haven't thought deeply about it because it's not something I've written much of.
Well, I think it's fun as a writer to challenge, I mean, for me anyway, to like challenge myself and think about like what I don't write, and then tell myself, no, I need to actually just write that, because I think that it's a really good growing exercise. I'm the type of person that I can just figure things out. Like, if you give me time and space, I can figure out most things. It just really helps me to be better if I'm trying to do difficult things.
Right. And I would probably bring a realistic bent to my surrealism. Come to think of it, what Tim was saying was that he was using surrealism in slightly a different sense. I guess it actually kind of comes down to whether you are someone who has everything planned out versus seat of the pants where you don't plan it out. So in his, maybe the way he was meaning it was, surrealism is you just put it on the page and you don't have any reasoning behind it. Is that, do you think that that's possibly?
I think he was meaning it as a sort of like catch-all phrase where if it's not in our history, in our world, then it is surreal.
What example did he use?
So like Tolkien is surreal because it's fantasy. It's not depicted as being our, in a clear way. Some people say it was like a pre-Earth history, but I'm like, I don't know if that makes any sense. I think it makes more sense. Unless Tolkien himself actually said that, it makes more sense to me that that is a fantastical world.
Yeah. It's also about whether you explain it to the reader or not, you know? I mean, realism is kind of like understanding it yourself and explaining it to the reader in this context. And surrealism is kind of like you put it on the page and it may have rules behind it or not, and you don't tell the reader why.
I actually prefer surrealism because there's just so much more license and less research, I feel like. You can get down to writing.
Right.
And invent it yourself. And if readers have questions, great. And there may be some like loopholes that you need to sort out later, but I'm a big fan of just plain writing and then figuring it out.
And this is actually kind of depends on what kind of writer you are. I was once in a class that we were learning how to teach freshman composition, and most of the class were like technical writers. And then there was just a few creative writers. And I actually bridged that gap because I do both. But it was so funny because the technical writers, you know, we all took a day where we taught a class as if we were the teacher teaching freshman comp. And the one creative writer in the class who was just a creative writer, the day she taught, she had everybody do some creative writing to loosen it up. And the technical writers were just, they went crazy. They were like, this is so uncomfortable. Oh my God. And they were like geeking out because the whole freedom of doing creative writing just drove them crazy. And it was hilarious, actually. So
yeah, that's really, really interesting because I can understand the technical versus creative, which could be another podcast. But I remember in my like school days, I love essay writing. I can just write out a technical thing, easy peasy, because there's so many guidelines. You just get it out.
Your structure is already there. Right?
The structure is there. You don't have to create it. Creative fiction is just 100% empty. That's where I just love the emptiness though. And that's why I love the surreal. You could just like close your eyes and think of anything at all and create a world out of it.
Right.
How amazing is that?
Absolutely. It's like, isn't it so wonderful that anything is possible? And isn't it so terrifying that anything is possible? Was that all our questions? Did
we? Okay. So we got one more and this one should be pretty easy to talk about. So is it okay for an author to not know everything about the history?
Yeah. I think, what do you think?
Yeah.
All right. We're done.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, what we were talking about last time is you can't know everything. So you have to figure out what you need to know. And then the other stuff, unless you need to know it, knowing more helps enrich your world, but you can't know everything.
No. And my trouble, like I was talking about at the earlier in the podcast is like, okay, so you build all of this, you do all of this intense work with building this amazing, realistic, complex world. And then you don't tell the readers about most of it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, because as we all know, a background dump is a big no-no. You don't just throw it on people. You have to very slowly weave it in. And if it's immense, it will take books and books. So
do you think it makes it makes the writing easier for me if I know at least a lot. At least some, in that I don't have the terror of the blank page so much because I have a whole bunch of stuff in my background in my head and I'm not like, what word would this person say, you know, because I know they have this whole thing in the background. They, well, obviously the world and the plot is more developed in my head, therefore it's easier to write.
What I figured out is, so how I did my first novel is I had a general idea of this total society collapse that happened before the major events of the book. As I went in the book, like as I started to write, I made it more and more complex, and I made it. And also the other thing that I figured out was that, like, I can create what happened in this world before I start writing. But then once I start writing, I had to change it like a ton.
Yeah, for right? sure.
Like, because like some of it just didn't make sense to what my character was doing. It didn't give enough motive. Like, it had to be deeper and in some ways like completely changed because it just didn't make enough sense. That's the other thing with creating and spending all this time creating the world and the history and everything like super complex. If you start writing, there's a like hopefully you start writing it eventually. When you start writing, it's likely that you'll have to redo a ton of it. That just like hurts my brain because I don't have a lot of time for writing anyway. So I'm like, I just rather get writing. And then, and then as I edit, I will get the meat on the bones.
Right. And that's a very good point because you can create worlds to the end, but once you put characters in it, it's going to be changed. It's going to change according. Sometimes it's just a matter of changing what you know about the world and not changing the world itself. But sometimes you fundamentally come up with a really great idea after you start writing and you're like, you just have to change everything. I think the best work, like you said, the best work is when you're open to those changes because that makes logical sense. Being open within the moment when you're typing, you're like, your character wants to do something. If you put it on the page, it will pay back great dividends. And if you don't put it on the page, it's a missed opportunity often because there's stuff that your subconscious is doing that you aren't aware of.
Yeah. The more that we talk about the history building, the more I'm seeing that I'm definitely a character writer where like everything that I'm doing to do with world and plot and history is about the character and what they want and need and what their weaknesses are and what the problems are and all these obstacles of it. Like, so that's how I've figured out how to structure my novels. So I definitely start with the character and then,
right.
And then go from there.
I think we can safely say character is part of the world. You know, that's kind of it's a changing thing, and it will change over the course of the book, but it's also the background prompts the plot and everything. So yeah.
Well, I really, really enjoyed watching his video. I think I might even watch it again so that
I'm going to watch more. Thank you for finding him. I'm going to watch a bunch of those because I had not come across him before. He's so smart and so funny and just so entertaining, and you just want to be his best friend, you know.
Yeah, very, very entertaining. And he's from what is it, New Zealand?
Yeah, I think New Zealand. Yeah,
so he has a great accent. That's nice.
Yes.
We just want to make sure that you were able to check out our bonus content, 1001 Lives. We're going to be adding some more once we get some great ideas going. So do check that out on our page. Also, please make sure that you notice we did change our URL to www.anchor.fm/1000liveslived. And we will catch you for our next session.
See you next time.
Hello, everyone. So as you all know, we have been running our promo code for publishing packages. That's 25% off. And we've been offering that for the last 2 weeks exclusively to our podcast listeners. Today is the last day that we'll allow the use of this code. So writers, if you have a manuscript ready, you're going to want to write this down. The code is Happy Publishing. Again, Happy Publishing. When you submit your manuscript to us via email, do please put in your code in the body of the email and we will get you that discount. The discount will be active until 7 o'clock p.m. on August 29th. Well, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to our channel. We've got some great shows coming up with amazing practical advice for writers, and for the bookworms, fun features on new and exciting books soon to be released. You don't want to miss out. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for all the updates. And if you'd like to be on our show, pitch us your idea on any of our pages. Until next time, keep writing, keep reading, and you'll live 1000 lives. Okay, welcome back, everyone.